All right, and it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is February 8, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to start celebrating Valentine's Day that is coming soon. And since I started the day with so many wonderful things today that I felt the love and I felt the emotion that is starting to come all around. And it's something that, you feel it if it's coming about and it exists, it's all around you. And it was a special day, and I hope you will have a special day wherever you are in the world. So let's start. Now, today on BBS Radio Studio One, we are going to talk about so many things that the world is giving us, the challenges that we have on hand and the focus that we are starting to have on the situation in the Middle East as far as the refugees go. And, you know, it's not easy because children are in stake in every aspect. And there is a great, great lady, the Duchess from England, that speaks so highly about children, and she cares so much, and she gave us a gift. She gave the world some understanding, and today I want you all to listen to it.
Talk to your friends about your feelings too.
It is an issue that's close to her heart. The Duchess of Cambridge has campaigned for some time on children's mental health. Today, she's released a video message to highlight this year's theme, the importance of building resilience.
This resilience, our ability to deal with stressful situations, is something we begin to learn in childhood as we respond to each challenge and problem life presents.
One in five children will develop a mental health issue by the age of 11. The government wants every school to have access to a counsellor, but a snapshot survey by the National Association of Head Teachers suggests two-thirds of primaries in England don't have one based on sight.
You've had a little bit of a falling out.
Support can be one-to-one or a drop-in session like this. Mandy is from the charity Place to Be, of which the Duchess is patron. This is a chance for children at Highfield Community School in Sunderland just to share what's bothering them.
When you talk to someone, like, you get stuff off your mind, like, something, you're worrying about it, like, you feel much more confident.
Say you're feeling upset or something, if you keep it upside, you'll blow up like a balloon, but when you speak to somebody, it really helps you feel better.
This is a good school where pupils achieve well, but like most, they have their challenges.
We have children who are very withdrawn, who find it very difficult to speak to anyone. We have children who become very aggressive, who find it difficult not to get into conflict. And we have the full range in between.
The government is investing £1.4 billion over the next 4 years in children's mental health. Mark Ashdown, BBC News.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Children health and building resilience in this challenging time is actually the ticket to safeguard our future. Because think about it. If we really, really understand what the children are going through in the Middle East, in Europe, and all the refugees come all over, and, the sick children in Brazil now, and all these diseases, God forbid, you have a really new generation that needs your support, your help. So if you build, an understanding, this is a really, really worthy cause. So I really understand it, and it's dear to me, and I hope that I wish her luck. She's starting a role in the leader of the world, as the Duchess of Cambridge. God bless her. Anyway, let's go on. We had a wonderful game yesterday, the Super Bowl, and the Broncos won. And I know what being from South Carolina, the Carolina punters probably had hope and understanding. But there weren't one before. And I remember many years ago that when the Broncos were in the final, they won two. So I knew that they could win yesterday, and sure enough, they did. So we had so many shows, and everybody was talking about the advertising, the entertainment, you know, Beyonce and all the rest. And what I learned is that whoever stole the show is actually something different. Let's listen to it.
Hello, James Brown, and how cool is that? We are in the blue room of the White House. He just said, hello, hello, hello.
Hey.
And
hey,
this James. Is the first time that this first couple has done a live interview together, so we are so psyched and so excited. Special thanks to you, Michelle Obama. Very good to see you, President Obama. But
great
this
to
is
see
interesting.
You.
When we pulled up, Kayla on your staff said to us, do you all have any big plans for today?
Yeah.
Have a good time. We said, we're kind of thinking this is a big plan. This is a big plan to be at the White House.
Yeah,
okay, but this is your last Super Bowl mm-hmm. in the White House. My question is this. Do you have any special plans for the day? Who's on the, what's the menu? Who's coming?
I've been cooking
off,
all day. I've been up there.
Don't let her tell stories now.
Barbecuing. I've had the grill out. Yeah, so I'm tired, but I got myself together for this.
You clean up nicely, Mrs.
Thank you.
O'Connor.
Thank you.
What's on the menu?
We have a regular group of friends that we've been having now mm-hmm. the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
We all go upstairs to the residents, sort of in the treaty room, which is my office. We clear everything out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, your basic wings,
yeah,
pizza, nachos,
we let
guac.
Let's move off the table.
Yeah. No, you know, people said, well, you know, she's let's move. Will there be carrot quesadillas?
Yeah, no.
And I said, no.
Well, there's like the little vegetable tray that nobody touches next to the stuff.
We're going to have two types of salads.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So,
there you go.
Just tell us, Mrs. Obama, two types. Just, I'm just curious. What
types?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know.
Because I was too busy barbecuing.
Okay.
I didn't know.
I got it.
Salads.
I didn't know if you needed extra house guests. I come with a posse of 33.
Yeah.
We
got a lot
stay,
of people in our house. Otherwise,
we can feed some folks.
We're getting on the Acela. So when you're at a Super Bowl party at the Obama house, do you watch the commercials? Do you care about the commercials?
Oh, no.
Game.
You know, we're like everybody else. Folks rate the commercials.
Yeah. You do.
Yeah. People.
But we have. But okay. Basically, we have sort of three ways that we do the Super Bowl. We have the serious watchers.
Yes.
And that's the treaty room where you got to be. If you're in that room, you're watching the game.
Watch the game.
Then there's the outside room where the kids are, where they're kind of fooling around. They're by the food. And then there's.
We keep them away.
Then there's the what I call the champagne room.
Uh-huh.
That's where my mother sits. Where you really don't know what's going on, but you're close to the champagne.
And
that's where grandma is. It's like,
they hear
oh,
some
it's,
shouting
it's
and
like,
oh, something must happen.
People come out of the champagne.
I was wondering
room.
When do we start breaking out the six pack or mixing the martinis. I was wondering at which point does that happen.
That's starting now.
That's starting now.
Actually, once we get done with this.
Who's more likely to yell at the TV during the game?
Ooh.
You know what? They.
It depends on who's playing.
Look, it's been a while since the Bears were there.
I know.
So
yeah,
we don't yell that much.
Look,
we enjoy watching the game, and we hope for a good game.
But if there's a good play, we'll all scream. You'll hear.
Oh, yeah.
Do you care about the halftime show? Coldplay,
mm-hmm.
Bruno Mars, and Beyonce.
I care deeply about the halftime show.
Yes.
Deeply.
Genius.
I got dressed for the halftime
yesterday.
Show. I hope
genius
Beyonce likes what I have
yes.
on.
Have you talked to her about any dance moves? Because those of us who have seen you dance on Ellen and Jimmy know that you got moves. You do too, Mr.
I've
President.
I've got some moves.
Yeah. No, I've talked to Beyonce about that turn up for what. I'm like, look, bae, you got to put this in your next video. Obviously, she didn't listen. No, Gail, I don't talk to Beyonce about dancing.
I was like, I was impressed, huh?
No, because listen, I know you guys are tight, but let's talk a little bit about the Barack and Michelle Obama. 2000, I remember 2008. I just happen to have this picture here.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Isn't that?
You look so young. What happened to you?
No, they wore me down.
One word. What were you two thinking? One word when you look at it. It's one of my favorite pictures of the Obama administration.
Well, the first inauguration, we had something like 10 balls that we went to.
I remember.
And
this was the first.
Michelle was in heels the whole time, so I think she was thinking, my feet really hurt.
Really?
And
what were you thinking, Mrs. Obama, when you look at that? It's such a sweet moment in the elevator.
You know, I'm sure I was thinking, I'm so proud of you.
Oh.
Yeah, that's that. I'm so proud of you. But my feet do hurt.
Her feet did hurt. You know, I think I said, like, one more to go, sweetie.
One yeah. more. It's like, you promised.
Almost done. But this is the thing, when I think about the Obamas, you know, even your dates make national news. They become yeah. news stories. Do you know there's a movie out called First Date? It's coming mm-hmm. out. I saw it. And the thing that struck me, in the movie, you're driving a raggedy car with a hole in it.
Oh, yeah.
This is true.
And I'm thinking, and you got a second date after driving that car?
Because I'm so smooth. I could make up for the hole in the car. It was a hoopty.
I thought I'm going to upgrade this brother.
that was in her mind at the time.
Upgrading, she
like,
did.
We can work with this.
But
it's a diamond in the rough.
But you're getting ready to go on to other things. Do you have advice for the new couple in? For instance, about the job, about the house. Is the water pressure good? Is there Wi-Fi? Does a toilet run in the Lincoln bedroom?
You know, the whole tech thing, we've been trying to get that straight for the next group of folks. Because this is an old yes. building, and so there are a lot of dead spots where Wi-Fi doesn't work. And we're going to see if we can...
I was Hopefully. Kidding about the Wi-Fi working.
No,
I was kidding.
No, actually, it can be an issue. So yeah, we're going to see if we can make it.
The girls are just irritated.
I'm thinking
by
you
it
know
sometimes.
People. Yeah. You know, there's a first lady who's running right now for first lady. Does that for president? Does that give you any ideas, Mrs. Obama?
Of what?
Okay.
What you talking about, Gail?
What you talking about, Willis? Okay. Couples, I want to play. I call the POTUS FLOTUS game. Mm-hmm.
I love it when he holds my hand.
Oh. Okay, I love it when she...
I love it when she laughs.
Oh. And
she's got a great laugh.
I can always count on her to...
I can always count on her to tease me about something.
I can always count on him to...
Not disappoint me.
Oh, you're
I told
so
you that
good.
A
yes,
long
you,
time
yes,
ago.
Yes, and I've never forgotten it.
Mm-hmm.
And after leaving the White House, POTUS will want to do...
Take a walk by himself outside.
You think so? Taking mm-hmm. a walk? After leaving the White House, POTUS will want to...
She's going to want to travel and you know, roam around the world in ways that we can't do when we're traveling
yeah.
In official capacities.
I've often wondered about that. This yeah. is an envelope called POTUS Prediction.
Oh.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Oh. Mm. Guess where I'm going with this?
It's so elegant.
Because I know that you don't make predictions, but I am asking this brief favor for you to circle who you think and your name, and we'll read it on CBS This Morning tomorrow. Here, I have a pen for you.
This is a lot of pressure.
No, wow. no pressure.
I'm glad it's
You're going to read it tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
But I have to fill this up. I can't just
well,
say...
I'm respectfully asking.
You know what?
You're not forced.
I'm respectfully asking. We won't reveal it until tomorrow.
All right. That was the person, you know, the first lady with the president of the USA saying I love you in so many different way. And it's beautiful. Think about it. We have, you know, to celebrate the week, this week, that everybody's saying I love you to each other. And the important thing is to remember that, you know, we are here for a period of time in the world. We really don't know how long we're going to last. We don't know how successful we're going to be. The only thing is that you have to cherish the ones that walk with you, that make a difference in your life, take care of you sometimes. You know, raise your eyes upstairs and say also I love you to God to remind, you know, yourself that there is somebody who watch over us. You don't have to take all the world on your shoulder, and you're not alone. You walk in this world, and he created you for a reason. So whatever difficulty you have, he loves you. So just trust, okay? All right. I got some music for you guys, so let's listen to one of them, all right? Bombarding the area. Meanwhile, there are refugees camps all over. And those refugees, they feel also that the Assad regime will kill them all. So they're running and trying to pass to Turkey, and there are thousands on the border there. The decision has not been made yet. But there is some kind of comfort, you know, from the English leadership, because Cameron is actually talking about the solution. I collected a few segments. Let's listen to the first one.
This is Erica Daska of WeAreChange.org here in Miami, Florida, and there's a lot of breaking, important, developing news right now between the United States and Russia when it comes to their proxy war over Syria. It looks like right now the United States gave up their key geopolitical goal of getting rid of Bashar al-Assad, saying that he could stay. And of course, this is a huge breaking news that has grave implications that you won't hear anywhere else. And we're going to tell you why this happened, how it happened, but most importantly, how you really shouldn't feel optimistic about this kind of pause in the proxy war between these two super world powers. Now, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, 5 days ago, traveled to Russia, negotiated with Putin, and said that the United States will no longer seek so-called regime change inside of Syria, and that Bashar al-Assad will stay in power. This is huge because, as we know from the WikiLeaks documents that came out by Julian Assange, that the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia have been planning to overthrow Bashar al-Assad since 2006. This is huge. The U.S. invested a lot of money, a lot of key geopolitical moves, a lot of sacrifices all around the world to have this strategic goal. Now, why did the United States want to get rid of Bashar al-Assad? There's many reasons. We covered them before in other videos, and it's too complex to get into now. But let me tell you why this is happening, why the United States gave up their geopolitical goal. On October 28, 2015, 2 months ago, we made a video telling you how Russia...
With permission, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to make a statement on progress with our renegotiation. The House has now had the chance to study the documents published by the European Council yesterday. I believe this is an important milestone in the process of reform, renegotiation and referendum that we set out in our manifesto and which this government is delivering. We've now legislated for that referendum and we are holding that renegotiation. So let me set out the problems that we are trying to fix and the progress that we have made. First, we don't want to have our country bound up in an ever closer political union in Europe. We are a proud and independent nation with proud, independent, democratic institutions that has served us well over the centuries. For us, Europe is about working together to advance our shared prosperity and our shared security. It's not about being sucked into some kind of European superstate, not now, not ever. Mr. Speaker, the draft text set out in full the special status according to the UK and clearly carves us out of further political integration. And they actually go further to make clear that EU countries don't even have to aim for a common destination. This is a formal recognition of the flexible Europe that Britain has long been arguing for. In keeping Britain out of ever closer union, I also wanted to strengthen the role of this House and all national parliaments. So we now have a proposal in the text that if Brussels comes up with legislation we don't want, we can get together with other parliaments and block it with a red card. And we've also proposed a new mechanism to finally enforce the principle of subsidiarity, the principle dear to this House, which states that as far as possible, powers should sit here in this Parliament, not in Brussels. So every year the European Union has got to go through the powers they exercise and work out which are no longer needed and should be returned to nation states. Now, second, I said we wanted to make Europe more competitive and deal with the rulemaking and the bureaucracy that can cost jobs here in Britain and indeed across the European Union. We asked for commitments on all the areas central to European competitiveness. We want international trade deals signed, the single market completed, and regulation stripped back. All of these things are covered in the draft texts. There is a new proposal for specific targets to reduce the burdens on business in key sectors. This will particularly help small and medium-sized businesses. And there is a new mechanism to drive these targets through and cut the level of red tape year on year. Third, we are absolutely clear that Britain is going to keep the pound, in my view, forever. But we need to be just as clear that we can keep the pound in a European Union that will be fair to our currency. Put simply, the EU must not become a euro-only club. If it does, it would not be a club for us. So we call for a series of principles to protect the single market for Britain. We said there must be no discrimination against the pound, No disadvantage for businesses that use our currency, wherever they're located in the EU, and no option for Britain ever again to be forced to bail out Eurozone countries. All of these principles are reflected in the draft text, which is legally binding. And again, there is a mechanism. Britain has the ability to act to uphold these principles and protect our interests. Now, Mr. Speaker, we should be clear. British jobs depend on being able to trade on a level playing field within the European single market, whether in financial services or cars or anything else. So this plan, if agreed, will provide the strongest possible protection for Britain from discrimination and unfair rules and practices. For instance, never again could the EU try its so-called location policy, that the settling of complex trades in euros must only take place in eurozone countries. These principles would outlaw that sort of proposal. Now, Mr. Speaker, these are protections we could not have if Britain were outside the European Union. Now, fourth, we want to deal with the pressures of immigration, which have become too great. Of course, we need to do more to control migration from outside the European Union. We are doing that, and we will be announcing more measures on that front. But we need to control migration from within the EU too. Now, the draft texts represent the strongest package we've ever had on tackling the abuse of free movement and closing down the backdoor routes to Britain. It includes greater freedoms for Britain to act against fraud and prevent those who pose a genuine and serious threat from coming to this country. It includes a new law to overturn a decision by the European Court, which has allowed thousands of illegal migrants to marry other EU nationals and acquire the right to stay in our country. And it has been a source of perpetual frustration that we can't impose our own immigration rules on third country nationals coming from the European Union. But now, after the hard work of the Home Secretary, we have a proposal to put that right. Mr. Speaker, there are also new proposals to reduce the pull factor that our benefit system exerts across Europe by allowing instant access to welfare from the day someone arrives. People said that Europe wouldn't even recognise that we had this problem. But the text explicitly recognises that welfare systems can act as an unnatural draw to come to this country. Now, Mr. Speaker, our manifesto set out four objectives to solve this problem. I mentioned these at Prime Minister's questions. We'd already delivered on two of them within months of the general election. Already, EU migrants will no longer be able to claim universal credit, the new unemployment benefit, while looking for work. And if those coming from the EU haven't found work within 6 months, they can now be required to leave. Now, in these texts, we've secured proposals for the other two areas. If someone comes from another country in Europe, leaving their family at home, they will have their child benefit paid at the local rate, not at the generous British rate. And crucially, we've made progress on reducing the draw of our generous in-work benefits. People said it would be impossible to end the idea of something for nothing, and that a 4-year restriction on benefits was completely out of the question. But that is now what is in the text. An emergency break that will mean people coming to Britain from within the EU will have to wait 4 years until they have full access to our benefits. Yeah. And the European Commission has said very clearly that Britain qualifies already to use this mechanism. So with the necessary legislation, we'll be able to implement it shortly after the referendum. Finally, let me be absolutely clear about the legal status of these changes that are now on offer. People said we would never get something that was legally binding. But this plan, if agreed, will be exactly that. These changes will be binding in international law and will be deposited at the UN. They cannot be changed without the unanimous agreement of every EU country, and that includes Britain. So when I said I wanted change that is legally binding and irreversible, that is what I've got. And in key areas, treaty change is envisaged in these documents. So, Mr. Speaker, I believe we are making real progress in all four areas. But the process is far from over. There are details that still need to be pinned down and intense negotiations to try and agree the deal with 27 other countries. It will require hard work, determination and patience to see it through. But I do believe that with these draft texts and with all the work we've done with our European partners, Britain is getting closer to the decision point. It is, of course, right that this House should debate these issues in detail. So in addition to this statement, and of course a statement following a council later this month, the government will also make time for a full day's debate on the floor of this House. Mr. Speaker, as we approach this choice, let me be clear about two things. First, I am not arguing, and I will never argue, that Britain couldn't survive outside the European Union. We are the fifth largest economy in the world, the biggest defence player in Europe, with one of the most extensive and influential diplomatic networks on the planet. The question is not could Britain succeed outside the European Union, it is how will we be most successful? How will Britain be most prosperous? How will we create the most jobs? How will we have the most influence on the rules that shape the global economy and affect us? How will we be most secure? And I've always said that the best answers to those questions can be found within a reformed European Union. But let me say again, if we can't secure these changes, I rule nothing out. Now, second, even if we secure these changes, you will never hear me say that this organisation is now fixed. Far from it. There will be many things that remain to be reformed, and Britain would continue to lead the way. We would continue to make sure that Europe works for the countries of Europe, for the businesses of Europe, for the peoples of Europe, and crucially for the British people who want to work and have security and get on and make the most of their lives. So if we stay, Britain will be in there, keeping a lid on the budget, protecting our rebate, stripping away unnecessary regulation, and seeing through the commitments we've secured in this renegotiation, ensuring that Britain truly can have the best of both worlds, in the parts of Europe that work for us and out of those that don't, in the single market, free to travel around Europe, part of an organisation where cooperation on security and trade can make Britain and its partners safer and more prosperous, but with guarantees that we will never be part of the Euro, never be part of Schengen, never be part of a European army, never be forced to bail out the Eurozone with our taxpayers' money, and never be part of a European superstate. That is the prize on offer, a clear path that can lead to a fresh settlement for Britain in a reformed European Union, a settlement that will offer the best future for jobs, security and strength for our country, a settlement which, as our manifesto promised nearly a year ago, will offer families in our country security at every stage of their lives. That is what we're fighting for, and I commend this statement to the House.
All right. That was David Cameron when he was speaking about the situation with the EU, the European Union, and how, you know, England can reform the EU in order for it to stay. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I know how America works. I know how incredible it is. And I understand that you want to play on, on a field that is a win-win situation. But for some reason, it sounds like David Cameron wants the best of the whole world. He wants to run solo, but have the whole group. But he doesn't take the responsibility. So I think that after listening again carefully to what he's saying, I think that there are some points that he cannot overlook. You cannot decide that you're not going to be responsible. You cannot be a part of it. I understand the 4 years, negotiation about giving some funds to whoever come and move and taking advantage of the system. That's, this, with the immigrant crisis, it's normal. But we have to really be careful about the fact that, you know, we want to take everything because the world is right now because we wanted to take everything and we left the world with nothing. Now, there is a race for the presidential, election in the USA. And the question is if you want to give the leadership or if the world is going to be with a leader that is from the big money, like Donald Trump, or, socialist with Bernie Sanders. Because as we see it, let's say it's the division between two worlds. Let's ask what happened. What happened in the last few years that is so crucial that everything collapsed? What happened that made us so fragile and all our houses of cards just collapsed? The truth of the matter, I feel that the marketing and the way that we worked was damaged. And I'll tell you how. You know, the world is run by men. And I don't complain. I love men. But for some reason, when they start being successful, they start run so fast that we women, as you know, mother are, we are a little concerned. So we try to hold back. And then we create friction because we're trying to force, you know, to hold back, to resist the change. But the men, when they feel that, you know, they're running in a race, they need to win. So they challenge each other until they break loose and they break to the other side. And once again, it's happening. Every 50 years, we have this crisis of manhood, you know, the trans against each other and keeping us women out of bay. Please don't interrupt me. Please don't be there. Please, you know, you work so hard to get me to this point, but now I'm done. I'm, you know, you go and you know, all these divorces that happen when women work so hard. Why I'm saying that? Because the decision making that was happening in the last few years were bad. And most of the men are in charge of the world. Nothing you can do about it. You men, you know, you can say women, we blame each other, you know, all of you. Most of the things are in the hands of men. In maybe not in America so hard, because women are really, in America, they know the difference and the men there respect them so much. But in the rest of the world, it's not like that, okay? So when we talk in democracy, democracy is cute, but women are not free. We have a problem. We have a huge problem. But let's take it back. Services, okay? Remember that day when you start calling those companies and the answering machine answer? Now, what happened when answering machine happens and when you call your friend? Or you hang up, right? Or you leave a message. Now, in America or in the rest of the world, wherever, when you answer the when you get this machine, you start having, you know, to go through the methodical choosing of where you want to arrive. Of course, you know, we are here for you, but you please try to trace your way in our company directory, and then maybe you will be lucky that on the other side there will be a voice that will correspond to what you actually need. And oops, if you made a mistake, you start all over again because, you know, we can't transfer you, I don't know what you want, or you leave a message, right? The idea is we ruin our world. The very creation of our world was depending on that service of man to man and not man to machine. And what we had a machine answering and doing apparently what we were supposed to do. Then we didn't pick up fast enough what we're supposed to do, and we took our sweet time. Like in all advertising, you can see men or women, they do nothing, they walk, oh, we work so hard on the computer, and you know, there is a chat here, there is a chat there, okay, not in the time of work, let's not pretend, you know, but we say we're all honest. And the company was going bad and bad. Services was not keeping this, you know, keeping up with the need, and it was lacking. And whoever tells me that this machine that, you know, replaced men, didn't replace work, is actually undermined everybody. Because once you replace the receptionist, you replace the vital energy in the, oh, of course, you keep the receptionist, but not for to the function of receptionist. Remember, the function was to open the door to the world. Once you put the machine to the doorways of your life, you guys all are the result. This day are the result, is the result of the machine. We have a machine in front of us, all of us, but we have no streaming. That machine doesn't have lifehood. And whoever thinks the technology is good to replace men work, hard labor, is wrong. I can understand when you have an engineered, you know, a machine that makes whatever, you know, makes cupcakes or makes chocolate bars or makes anything that is good and functional, of course. But you always have to have a supervisor, right? Men need to be there. Now, what happened? We allowed those big companies get rich because we absorbed all the, you know, the misservices that they gave us. What happened? What happened then? You gave the permission to the big company to have more customers with less work, manpower on the, you know, on the floor. And then slowly, we just starting to, you know, that man is not in work, that man doesn't answer his call, this service is not done, and we start going back and back. As a marketing whiz, like I am, which I am, I can tell you that the moment that I start answering, you know, getting an answering machine, I was starting screaming. In my own company, when the machine answered, I had a fit because I understood that it's over. Because you cannot replace men. You cannot replace the energy and the understanding, the warmth and the resourcefulness that the man has. So when Mr. Cameroon, returning to the previous subject or to the previous segment, when he says that he wants to create work, no, you just stop indulging those big corporations to give us less and we pay for more. Those supermarkets, we can have absorb everything and we just shove it all in your face at once without any services. Don't let it be. And then they take over and there is monopolies and people say, no, they're not really manipulated. They're different companies. Yeah, right. You guys know that the banking give the chunk to the big companies and it's still there. And now that Donald Trump is screaming, we want to make America great. Yes, we got to take you out of the way, you billionaire. You stole our America. Our America you stole, not stealing like stealing. It's like the dream of the, we can make it. What do you make me, a bully? You got a bully and he said, oh, I'm a winner. Of course you're a winner. You bull us, you know, you beat us all to the ground. Not mad. But I know Americans are smarter than that. And I don't care, you know, like I love Donald Trump, he's funny, but please, you know, I don't want the wrestler in the White House. I need somebody whose wisdom is known, men can listen to. Yes, everybody say, oh, what a great guy. Yes, of course he's a great guy. He managed to outsmart everybody else. Not a question. But we need a daddy. We need somebody to take care of us. We don't want somebody to beat us up and, you know, be richer. Now, you're not planning to be poor, right? So $8 billion is enough to go retire someplace, Mr. Donald Trump? You need America to come play with? Aren't you done? Because by all means, what else you can think? Oh, what did you invent that you can give America? Some bully? We know your bully techniques. We got it. And you took over the Republican Party, you know, bidding them to the... What is it? And they're all nice. They're nice and they're gentlemen and they have stories and they can't tell, but they won't because they're gentlemen, because that's the GOP method. They don't. And you come and beat them up. And, you know, I was, like, so mad at everybody else, and I'm now completely off argument because we ended up, you know, we started with the Cameron. I understand that the free world needs a new innovation and thinking about how to get along. get some job because the economy is aching everywhere. People are dying from, you know, with no work. And now we have Donald Trump who decided that he's not enough billionaire. He wants to take over the world. Yeah, right. Let's think again. Not playing that game, and I'm not fighting, and don't, please don't put your $40 billion or $1 million on somebody just to beat, you know, the heck to get to win. You lost Iowa because you didn't want to win. We all know you didn't show up for the Fox debate. It was because you didn't want to go there. That's it. Nothing with Megan Kelly, which is, she's fantastic with her haircut and with her knowledge and understanding. It's about you didn't want to be there. Cold feet, maybe. I called it cold feet. I have no question about it. I knew that you're losing your hands 2 weeks before that, too, when you gave Ted Cruz some kind of a fight, which you didn't give. You didn't want to win. So I figure that in your guts, Donald Trump, you don't want to win. Maybe I misspoke or maybe you misunderstood, but that's my guts, okay? And my guts tells me well for all my life. So I know that my filters are really well, engineered, let's say. Anyway, let's talk about, Donald Trump, you're beautiful, so we love you, but please get off this horse, you know, go play somewhere else, you know, you're done. No, we're done. We need to think. Now we have crisis in there, and, you know, we need to get our money back, and you got it all, so we want to have it back. What do you think? All right. Let's get some music, and we'll be back. All right, that was so beautiful, Joe Cocker. Take us where we're supposed to be and give us a chance to fly as high as we can. That's amazing that, if we take a moment to understand that we can make it and we are going to make it because we don't have any other choice, right? So we have to fly as high as we can. Anyway, we are almost running out of time, but before you leave, I promise, the member of Israeli Knesset, to let you listen to this. Let's listen to the Ethiopian Jews.
The government of Israel has received unanimously a decision to bring more than 9,000 Ethiopian Jewish community who are remained in Ethiopia. And they have their families here in Israel, first, second, third degree families who are already migrated to Israel. So the government decision will finally reunite these families here in the land of Israel.
You must be deeply satisfied with this result.
Yes, I am very much satisfied. My happiness will be completed when the people reached and arrived in Israel and they reunite with their families.
How long will that process take?
Well, according to the government decision, it has to be completed within 5 years. But I am optimistic that once the process is start, we will facilitate the process so that we can make it shorter, not 5 years, but we can make it, I hope, 2-3 years to complete the immigration.
Why has it taken more than 20 years to get to this point?
Look, it has to be also clear that there are now 140,000 Ethiopian Jewish who are now living here in Israel, proud citizens of the State of Israel. And this process has been since the 1980s. Now the remaining are those also left behind. Sometimes there is also a bureaucratic situation. The other fact is also the family didn't start their process to come to Israel at the same time. The other fact also is a bureaucratic situation also on the government side.
So you have a huge community of Ethiopian Jews who will now have to be resettled in Israel. How easy will it be to assimilate them in their new home?
The fact is that the Ethiopian Jewish community comes from a traditional society to a modern technological society. The transition process is not easy. And also, the integration process is a challenging one, as the community is not very much experienced for the modern life. The process is very slow. However, we have on the right direction, and we need just to do more efforts and push in order to integrate into the society.
All right. That was Dr. Abraham Nagasa, the member of Israeli Knesset, which is working with the Ethiopian Jews and to bring the rest of them to Israel. You know, they brought them in a few years back, and now there are some left that are in very bad condition. We wish him well, and God bless him. And, you know, bringing back people to the Jewish land is a holy thing, so God bless you all. So we are running out of time, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. I hope you had a wonderful, wonderful, time here. And I wish you happy Valentine's Day. We're going to skip our Wednesday show, and we'll be back on Monday next week. God bless you all. Love you. A lot of love. A lot of happiness to everybody. Enjoy life. Enjoy your being here, because you're special, you're beautiful, and God loves you. All the best. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.